Guess what day it is?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Hi, I'm Steve.
Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going. Yes, I'm going.
6:11, you wake up on a Wednesday. We're all still here. Yes, I'm going. And the Earth continues to spin. The globe continues to spin on its axis. Maybe saying, why am I being so philosophical at this hour?
Steve, why are you being so philosophical at this hour?
Yeah, it's a little scary.
I couldn't find my notes. I was looking for the stuff I have to do next.
Oh, that makes sense.
It's stolen.
Yeah. Okay.
Killing time, huh?
Top six. Yeah, top six at 6 in a second. That's Mary Vandeveld. How are you?
I am good. Getting in the Christmas spirit,
yeah,
sort of.
Shopping?
No, not getting there.
I did a little shopping yesterday. I bought a gift for Mike Jacobson, producer of the program, and Mike he's very difficult to buy for.
Shh. You're not supposed to tell your Secret Santa.
No, it's not Secret Santa.
Oh.
That's just a gift for me.
Okay.
But I haven't bought anything for the rest of you people yet, and I would, you know, really any sort of suggestions you would have, subtle suggestions like here's what I want would be helpful.
No, Steve, you don't have
don't
to get,
have to
us,
get
anything.
Us anything. Yeah.
I know.
Just you being you is enough.
Where's my gift?
I'd take a drone or maybe a $1,000 bill.
Trip to Mars.
Drone is a good idea. Let me write that down.
No, because he'll bring it in here.
A meat of the month club would be nice.
Meat of the month.
Maybe your drone could go pick up your meat.
I'm kidding, of course.
That's a possibility.
I would like shoes or some yoga pants.
Didn't I buy you yoga pants a couple years ago?
I like shoes, too.
Well, they wear
shoes
out.
Are good.
Yeah. So would I.
That means she's going to yoga because they're wearing out.
Could that be our thing? Every year I get you new yoga pants?
Or shoes. We all like shoes.
Yeah, I could use a new pair of shoes.
Boots.
How about
are you writing
one,
all this down, Steve?
One shoe and one yoga pant leg, you know, so you get both ends covered, right?
Makes sense.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Dave, what can I get you? Booze?
You did that once.
Yeah.
You bought me...
I bought you moonshine.
Moonshine that was called White Lightning, coincidentally.
Yeah. And so it goes. At 6:13, Elyse Glenk will be on the show talking about money. Dean Richards will be on the show talking about show business. Connor Murphy from the Blackhawks will be on the show talking about the Blackhawks. We've got the Antioch Choir in studio after nine. Tina Brown, maybe the most famous newspaper, magazine publisher and editor ever, will be on the show. And my friend Tim Becker, comedian Tim Becker, will be in a little bit. Karen Conti talking about the law. But you know what we do now. It's the top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Item number one, John Conyers out in Congress. The 88-year-old Michigan representative, the Democrat, accused of sexually harassing numerous female employees of his and colleagues of his, decided to resign rather abruptly yesterday. And he is gone. There will be a special election to succeed him, though he is hoping to have one of his relatives. A relative, Steve, I think is undetermined at this point, right?
I believe they said it was going to be his grandson or maybe one of his nephews.
Okay.
Right. So there's lots to choose from there.
Item number two. A direct quote from an insider on the Republican side. Holy crap, this is a mess. That's a quote from Washington yesterday as the GOP tax plan is riddled with glitches. Bad dominoes where one thing falls and negatively impacts another and would ultimately lead to having way less than the votes they need to pass it in the Senate, if not the votes they need to pass it in the House as well. even though it's in committee now, they're trying to fix it. The more they try to fix it, the more it comes apart, which led to the quote yesterday, "Holy crap, this is a mess."
So if you were going to send a GIF of this or a GIF of this, it would be the dumpster fire, the dumpster burn?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I think that symbolizes it quite well, as a matter of fact. Next. Steve Bannon is back from the dead. The Donald Trump chief advisor who was excommunicated by Trump several months ago now was in Alabama last night at a rally for Roy Moore. And at that rally, he was shooting his mouth off quite a bit and at one point said about Mitch McConnell, who is Mitt Romney, who may run for the Senate in Utah against a Bannon-supported candidate. He said Mitch McConnell's five sons didn't go to war. They didn't fight in Afghanistan and Iraq, intimating that the religion was used as an excuse to keep them out of war. This is the Trump move. Ignore what you've done. Criticize what others have done. Point being, Donald and Eric didn't sign up for anything I'm aware of other than tennis lessons. And yet Steve Bannon is out there yapping about Mitt Romney's sons. The hypocrisy knows no bounds. It's amazing. Next. Billionaire Ken Griffin in the sports business. Ken Griffin and the Chicago Fire are leading the effort to build 50 new mini soccer fields in underserved neighborhoods in Chicago over the next 5 years, which I think is fantastic.
It's a really cool thing. Have you ever seen one of these?
No.
There's one in a park near my house, and my wife and I were walking one day, and we kind of stumbled upon it. And they're kind of cool. They have short walls around it, so the ball's not just constantly being kicked out. And these are going to have, I guess, asphalt surfaces. But it's a way that basically a couple of kids can just go and kick a soccer ball around. They don't have to worry about going and retrieving it all the time because it's going to stay within the walls and kind of get familiar with the game. And to me, this, with all the efforts that have been made to grow the sport, this would seem to be one that really makes a lot of sense and very generous on Griffin's part. He's donating, I think, $3 million to this project.
$3 million and said, "I can see it. And my colleagues who played in team sports, how that just helps them advance in their career. They understand how to collaborate to get things done." So good for Mr. Griffin. Next. President Trump plans to upend decades of U.S. policy by formally recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. This is your big story of the day. You may be saying, well, why is it a big deal if we move our embassy? Moving our embassy and officially recognizing Jerusalem is going to create great problems, specifically in the Arab world. But we haven't really heard from Christians on this as well. Jerusalem is a city claimed by Christians, Jews, and Muslims as their own. And to say it belongs to one and not the other two is problematic, and that's the symbolic gesture of putting the embassy there. It's something that Israeli leadership has wanted for a long time, and it'll be a very positive move within the bounds of Israel, but certainly not in the Arab world. Again, not much from the Christian world and not much from the Pope.
It's and it's hard to believe that the president doesn't know how serious the effects of this might be. The State Department has actually issued a warning to American business people and also personnel from embassies there in Jerusalem and in Tel Aviv to be careful as this announcement is being made.
Yeah, travel warnings throughout the Middle East. Next, Bitcoin. Check your pockets. Do you have a Bitcoin? Bitcoin, the digital currency, leaped above $12,000 for the first time yesterday. The gains from the start of the year to now over 1,100%. Elise Glink will explain a little more about Bitcoin and whether or not it's just a resurgence of the fad as opposed to something that'll stick around. And last, and then there's this. I've never had avocado toast.
It's good. It's good.
Is it just what it sounds like, toast with avocado?
Yes, it is.
With a spread. Yeah.
Yeah, because Abigail loves it.
I love avocado.
You put jelly on top of the avocado?
What?
Peanut butter? Wait, was that mic?
That mic was open. that was on. But Abigail loves the avocado toast. That's
good.
New listeners, that's my almost
starting healthy.
Yeah, I didn't even know what an avocado was when I was her age. Well, I didn't know anything when I was her age.
Yeah.
So wait, do you make guacamole first and then put it on the toast, or do you just put the avocado raw on the toast?
there's avocado. You can buy
spread. Yeah, you can buy a spread.
So but I go by a restaurant and pretend I'm ordering chips and then run to the car.
It's a big deal now, avocado spread.
And avocado toast is a huge thing.
Oh yeah,
is avocado good for you? Is it healthy?
Oh yeah.
It's the healthy fat.
I think it's, yeah, it's high. It's fat, but it's
the good fat. Good fat. Supposedly.
The good kind. Yeah,
it was in my chopped salad the other day.
The avocado was?
Yes.
Or other things?
At Howls and Hood. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it's supposedly quite tasty. Anyway, avocado toast. A woman in Hawaii may have found the world's biggest avocado. She'd submitted the paperwork to the Guinness Book of Records. Previous record in 2009 was a 4.8-pound avocado in Venezuela. This avocado is said to be over 5.5, maybe closer to 6.
Have you seen a picture of it?
I have not.
And I kind of wonder...
Is it as big as my head?
Pretty close.
Okay.
And I kind of wonder, she was apparently walking around and found it in Hawaii. And I don't...
Oh, that sounds like a stunt.
Yeah, if you were... Would you just like pick up an avocado if you saw it lying there? I don't think I would. Even if it was
but
a
if you
big
saw
avocado.
A giant avocado, you'd see the giant avocado. It wouldn't. That sounds like somebody put it there to create a viral video or something.
I don't know. And then would you
did
think,
it say Wilson on the side of it? Was it possibly
yes,
a volleyball?
Yes, it did. Did you? I mean, would you think to submit papers to Guinness?
No.
I mean, they were, hey, I just found a big avocado. Let's see if it's the biggest in the world.
Yeah, I don't know. We're going to have to get to the bottom of this. This is a very important story. We're going to get to the bottom of this before the show's over.
Yeah.
Top 6 brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Man. Merry traffic. John DeCoste is here. John, where are we going to do the New Year's Eve show this year?
Oh, second year in a row we are doing at the Tivoli in downtown Downers Grove, a beautiful old-time theater redone. That's going to be a 7 o'clock show on New Year's Eve. You, me, Tim Banker, Mike Toomey, other surprises. What a blast.
Things are still very difficult this morning for much of the world. I would say if you come out on New Year's Eve, your life will be better.
Oh, there's no question about
it'll
it.
It'll be uplifting. It'll be funny. It'll be a good time. How do we get tickets?
You can go to eventbrite.com and then just click on Cochrane New Year's Eve and you get your tickets through there. And they are going, so please, the sooner the better, because this is going to be a great year. One show, only one show this year, Tivoli, downtown Downers Grove.
Dateline Seoul, South Korea. NBC staffers concerned they're going to get nuked during the Winter Olympics. NBC staffers understandably gun-shy about volunteering to work at the upcoming 2018 Pyeongchang Olympic Games. An insider told Page Six, the New York Daily News gossip column, that staffers are enthusiastic about the Games but don't want to go to South Korea. Pyeongchang is a South Korean city about 40 miles south of the DMZ that's changed the capitalization and spelling in its name, so not to be confused with Pyongyang, the capital of North Korea. But anyway, here's a quote. They usually all want to sign up for the Olympics, but they're afraid to get nuked, says a source. If NBC News employees have concerns about attending, they're not required to go. That was the same policy with the Rio Games, because remember, we thought there'd be a Zika problem in Rio. This is understandable to me. I mean, don't you think, okay, if you're that little nut Kim Jong-un, don't you think this is the perfect time to create havoc? I'm not saying he's going to nuke the Olympics, but if you're going to cause a problem.
I mean, it seems like a target. It seems like a full
target. The entire
target.
World
I can't believe
is
the
there.
IOC hasn't, you know, been talking more about this.
The entire world would be there.
You know, the and it,
other
I
than
see,
Russia, who
I can
was
see why they're a little
banned
bit
yesterday.
Uneasy because you heard what Lindsey Graham said over the weekend on one of the Sunday shows. He suggested that maybe it's time for the Pentagon to start removing dependents.
Yeah, military
from
family
South
members.
Korea. Yeah. So I don't know.
I don't know. Dave, when can you go? Because we're sending you.
yeah, I'm busy with basketball, but. Remember,
sounds like the perfect place for Mark.
He likes
Carmen.
Basketball.
And remember, North Korea will have a delegation at the Olympics. Now, I don't. That might not be.
I'd watch
enough
them.
Of prevent. Well, no, I think it's.
This is not a suicide bomber culture. This is a bad guy, Boris Badenov. Hiding behind his palace walls. Ordering missiles to be shot.
But I would say with North Korean athletes there, you would think that it would help to make things a little safer at the Olympics, except that we know that
he'll
he's not afraid
kill
to
his
kill
brother.
His own people.
Yeah, he killed his half-brother. So I don't know. It just seems to me if you're Kim Jong-un and you don't think you're being respected by the world, that raining on that parade would be a good thing. So, well, time will tell. Obviously, hopefully, all of that is more of a concern than a reality.
So if you're an NBC employee, would you go?
Mm-mm.
Really?
No. Wouldn't go near it.
What if you were a WGN employee?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, dedicated to this place. 6:30, we're back with a big story in a moment. And then coming up, Karen Conti. Amongst things you want to talk to Karen Conti about is how much right does Bob Mueller have to go looking at Donald Trump's money? That's happening today as well. 6:30 on 720 WGN.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
Karen Conti, attorney at law, representing what law firm?
My law firm is Conti Law.
Hey, guess what happened to me last night?
What?
Somebody stole my American Express card.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the number. Unfortunately, I have, you remember in the spring I had my ID stolen?
I do.
And so that's a problem. And, you know, and you're, well, once it's out there, you're on the dark web forever. But I'm pretty sure I got scammed by one of those, I don't know what they're called, but the thing that attaches to the credit card machine. And
the skimmers?
The skimmer, that's it. Mm-hmm. Because what happened is I got an alert from American Express approving a large purchase for $620 to Ticketmaster last night at 6:30. And a few minutes before, I had been at a gas station.
That's where it happens. That's where it happened to me, too.
You got it, too?
Yep. I got nailed at the.
Wow.
Everybody says the gas stations are the number one place.
I got the warning, and I called American Express and said, "What's the deal here?" And I had to cancel the card. So American Express is sending me a new card. So you criminals who stole my card, you're going to need to work harder. I'll have a new number. They're very aggravating, wow. Just very annoying.
Yeah, scary. It's very scary. Everyone should be watching their bank statements at all time, their credit card bills. Sometimes people just let these things go by, and everything's on automatic pay these days, right? So people sometimes don't check things, but you really need to spend some time and do that.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't know. It's just the world we live in, right? I mean, it's not like we're going to be able to stop it now. We've just got to be more diligent about protecting our stuff.
And we just have to understand that people who want to steal, whether it's embezzlement or stealing checks or whatever it is, these people are motivated. You know, you and I probably would never even think about all the schemes that are out there available to people to steal money. But when you're desperate, that's what you do. And they're predators. And you just have to protect yourself by checking up on every single thing every single month. When you get a piece of mail, open it. A lot of people don't do that anymore.
Yeah, it's a fair point. And one more piece of breaking news. The Me Too movement has been named Time's Person of the Year. And you may be confused on how a movement could be named a person, but the Person of the Year is a symbolic award for the most newsworthy moment of the year, and that would be the Me Too moment, according to Time magazine, as predicted by Vandeveld yesterday.
I like it. I like that.
Yeah. And is Matt Lauer, this is off the top of my head, is Matt Lauer still possibly subject to criminal penalties in regards to his sexual harassment, or we don't know?
I don't think there's going to be criminal penalties. I'm not quite sure that anything he did amounted to a crime. Certainly sexual harassment at the workplace. But, you know, that's like about a 300-day statute of limitations from a civil standpoint. I don't know if any of his activities were as recent as that. So, you know, the statutes of limitation are pretty short on these things in a civil realm just because you want to be able to have them addressed easily and quickly, and most of them are one-on-one type of incidents, so there's not going to be a huge amount of evidence except the he said, she said. So,
what about showing somebody your junk? Is that a crime in Illinois?
I mean, it probably would be some kind of crime. It probably would be some sort of sexual assault. Assault is really just the threat of something that is offensive.
Okay.
It's a threat of a battery. So that could technically certainly, it's certainly disorderly conduct, if nothing else.
All right, I got two things I want to hit you with, but let's do traffic first. We'll come back. I want to talk about the Mueller probe looking at the Deutsche Bank records of Donald Trump's money. Because, of course, he's above it all, and we couldn't possibly let us see his tax returns, even though we shoved the new tax plan down America's throat. And then this Supreme Court gay cake gate. Yeah, all of that. But first, it's 6:46. Mary, update us. Karen Conti, on the radio again anytime soon?
No, not in the foreseeable future. I think we're talking January. Otherwise, you know, we're just preempted throughout this whole holiday season.
The Hawks are playing most Sunday nights when you would normally be on with Noonan.
That's right.
Well, let's continue here. Let's talk about this gay cake, cake gay thing. This is a bakery where the baker said due to religious reasons he would not do a wedding cake for a gay couple that were about to be married. And the Supreme Court is going to decide, or they have?
No, they're going to decide. We had the arguments yesterday. And by the way, people don't know this, but you can actually go online to the Supreme Court website and listen to the arguments. They're not as exciting as one would think. But in a case like this, it might be enlightening to, for some of your listeners to listen. But in any event, there was a heated argument. And as you know, when you hear the judges back and forth, you kind of don't know where they stand on these things because they're playing devil's advocate. But it was a heated discussion. And I think it's a very interesting case because, in my view, everyone's entitled to their religious beliefs. That's what this country is founded on. But when you operate a business, you can't use those beliefs to discriminate.
But here's my question, and I'm not defending it, but is refusing to sell discrimination when in a free market I can go somewhere else to buy?
Yes, because if you're black and you go into a lunch counter and they say, no, there's 20 other places you can go that serve black people.
Oh, yeah.
No,
okay. All right. Well, that's what I was looking for, that kind of clarity.
And I think one of the things people have to understand is, yes, you can have your beliefs, but there's always going to be a collision, if you will, of constitutional rights. Yes, you can believe, but no, you can't discriminate. I mean, religious beliefs have been used in the past to discriminate. Colleges used to say, no interracial dating. Schools used to say, if you get pregnant and you're an unwed mother, that's not a Christian act and we're going to fire you. So we can't. That's just not where we are in a country, and you can have your beliefs, but it can't collide with the idea that discrimination is wrong in our society. And what's going to be interesting is this would be a different case if the baker said, yes, I'll serve you. Yes, I'll give you a wedding cake, but I'm not going to put the two women or the two men on top. Meaning, I'm going to serve you. I'm going to give you allow you to do business with me, but you can't make me do something that offends my religious beliefs. That would be different. This guy just said, I'm not serving you. So that's where I think the Supreme Court is going to bring down the gavel and say what happened here was wrong because he refused service.
Yeah, it seems
we
fair.
Will
it
not
seems,
rule
it seems,
on anything further. Go
it seems
ahead.
Fairly clear. Are you surprised they took the case?
No, I'm not. I think these things have been colliding for years. We have the issues of whether or not an employer must fund an insurance policy that deals with birth control. If you have religious beliefs that say that birth control is wrong, then do you have an obligation to fund that? Those cases have really gone up and down in the courts with various rulings. And yeah, we're going to see more of them. I think people are still offended by gay marriage. I think people are going to use their religious beliefs to continue to be offended by gay marriage. And I think this is where we are. And I think there's going to be tons of cases on this very issue.
So in this case, the law supersedes the religious beliefs because the religious beliefs create a discrimination practice that is a violation of the law.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's my view, and I think that's the way they're going to come down.
All right. Donald Trump said, stay away from my money, Mueller. I might fire you. This was the intimation a while ago. Now the well-sourced rumors are that Mueller is looking into Deutsche Bank activity that would involve Trump and Trump's money, because the theory for a long time has been Trump doesn't make money off Russia. He owes money to Russia, and that's why he's been bending over backwards and forwards. And making sure that his buddy Putin doesn't take any heat on anything. So what do we know about this story?
Well, I think there's some bullet points here. Deutsche Bank, it's disputed how much money he owes Deutsche Bank, between $130 and $300 million. Deutsche Bank sold off loans to Russian banks. We don't know exactly which ones were sold, but it may be that some of those Trump loans were sold to a Russian bank, and that Russian bank could be even a state-run bank called VEB. We know that Kushner met with the president of VEB in December. We also know that Trump announced almost immediately this plan to improve relations with Russia. So we also know that Russia interfered with our elections. So if you take all those bullet points, I think what Mueller's trying to do is connect them to see if there's any relation between the idea that Russia somehow has leverage over Donald Trump because of the money that he owes them and his policies and what he's doing in office. I think that's where he's headed directly. Whether he's going to find something or not, I don't know that I have an opinion because we just don't know enough facts.
And is there any legal thing that you're aware of that Trump could do to stop this from happening?
Not really. I mean, he could continue to fire people, but there are going to be continued people appointed to do this. At some point, the question is, can he be prosecuted? And I know a lot of lawyers say he can't while he's in office. I think he probably could be. I think that we've seen Whitewater and Iran-Contra and the investigation into Clinton's sexual misdeeds. Those things all contemplated that at the end of the day, there could be some prosecution of our president. We haven't seen that yet. We don't know what the Supreme Court would do with that. But, we've got impeachment, which is the political process, and we've got indictment, which is the criminal process. And in my view, both of those things could happen if the facts were there.
The Miranda rights don't include whatever you tweet could be used against you. But in this case, could his Twitter be used against him? And is there a precedent that's been set for that?
Absolutely. That's why it's so dangerous for people who are under scrutiny to go on the media. We saw that with Drew Peterson. It was possible that the government could take little snippets from things he said on television and use that against him. And that's frightening. Yes, I've seen things, obviously you've seen too, that Trump is tweeting that are inconsistent statements, not that he's under oath when he's tweeting or that he's even alive or awake, but it's just stupid what he's doing, really. I mean, you don't tweet, first of all, forget about the political ramifications, but you don't tweet when you're under scrutiny because everything is going to be used against you.
Last question, and it relates to sort of the same manner of discussion here. Paul Manafort is the former Trump campaign manager who was on the verge of being granted freedom from his ankle bracelet and the ability to travel to four states, all based on bail being set and his $11 million worth of homes being put up for bail. And now Mueller wants it rescinded because apparently Manafort worked with some Russian colleague specifically against the rules that were laid out to him. Don't engage in any activity with anyone of Russian descent anywhere. And he did it anyway, if this proves to be true. These kind of difficult clients have to be a lawyer's nightmare.
Well, they are, and people who like to break the rules or walk on the line, that's a lot of times why they get to where they are. They're successful because they push the issue, and so, but they're uncontrollable. And people like Manafort, people like Donald Trump, he's never had a boss other than himself. He's never worked for the government, let alone a company. So he just does what he wants to do, and he sues people, he goes bankrupt, he uses the process to help himself, but when a lawyer tells you you shouldn't be tweeting, or a lawyer tells you you should do this, that, or the other thing, or not have your kids in office, they should be obeying those lawyers' commands. And I think that the lawyers are some ways afraid of being fired by him. So you always walk that line. Will I be fired? Sometimes you just tell a client what to do, and if he doesn't do it, you threaten to withdraw, and maybe you withdraw from representation. I'm sure that these lawyers there's a lot of pressure being put on them right now.
Well, I would think that because the rules don't apply to me is such a sociopathic behavior that these are the clients you have to resign from, don't you?
You do, but on the other hand, they all deserve a defense. And as long as they're not asking you to do something that's unethical, and if they're just doing things to hurt themselves, sometimes lawyers stay in there. I mean, stick in there and try to help them.
He'll change for me. I'm different.
It's tough.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
That's the toughest part of your job is to try to tell somebody to do something and urge them to do something in their best interest when they just can't see it.
It's Karen Conti. How do we get a hold of you?
call me at 312-332-7800 or on my new email address, which is wgn@askkarenconti.com.
This is the Steve Cochran Show. Woo!
Woo! Ow! Love that money.
Money. 7:13 now. The Steve Cochran Show continues. Thanks for listening to it. And 9 o'clock hour this morning, of course, will be on CLTV. I want to wish happy birthday to my brother, Mickey. He's very, very old. Hey, he's 59
birthday,
today.
Mick. Happy birthday, Mickey.
Wow.
59 years old. Whew. He called this morning to have me wish him a happy birthday. So
that's good. He should. You, oh, he you did. Should. You should have called him first.
John DeCoss is the brother he always wanted.
Yeah.
He loves John. So.
It's pretty cool. I cry.
Have you done a song for Mick yet?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, maybe we could play that on the air at some point.
Okay.
Elise Glink is here. She's sponsored by Grandview Homes. Do you want to wish my brother a happy birthday?
I do. Happy birthday, Mick.
There you go. All right. Let's start with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. What is the CFPB?
So back in the day, 2008, when the world fell apart for real, we had people who decided that the consumer should come first. And so under Barack Obama, he appointed Richard Cordray, who was the first acting bureau chief. And there was a huge fight around this, setting up this bureau, because this was going to be the very first place that consumers could go to for redress. If they had any problems, they could file complaints with the CFPB. The CFPB would investigate. And over the last sort of 9 years that the CFPB has been around, companies have been found to be doing terrible things to consumers. So just for example, you have the Wells Fargo.
Sure.
Oh, oops, we set up 3 million accounts without asking permission and then charged you for it, you know, and things like that. So the CFPB has been running along quite nicely, and it's been kind of a beacon in what's been going on this year with the Trump administration. And he and the Republicans have been dying to get rid of it. And so there's been a huge battle of who was going to take over, and it was pretty clear that Richard Cordray would stay there as long as he wanted to. But when he announced his resignation, this was like the week before last, he appointed his first lieutenant as the acting bureau chief, and Trump said, nope, Mulvaney's going to do it. Now, Mulvaney has been an outspoken opponent of the CFPB, and it went to court, and actually court sided that with Trump that he could name the next head of the CFPB. And just to be clear, the CFPB doesn't roll up into Congress. It rolls up into the Federal Reserve, and the whole budget for it comes from the Federal Reserve and any fines that they levy. But it's just a thorn in the side of everybody who's a Republican. And so Mulvaney took over. There was this fight. They both showed up for work at 7:15 last week, and he took the, you know, the office, and she lost in court. So,
well, he brought donuts. That was part of the story, that he brought donuts.
He didn't bring donuts.
Yeah, that was her mistake. So the argument for and against the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the for is obvious. What's the against?
The against is that it hurts the poor big banks and other financial services companies.
All right, and let me be clear on something here for people that might be listening and go, Elise, listen to her, that liberal. Nobody likes to make more money than Elise. Money's right. Her business. But she'd like to do it legally without exploiting people. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary for, you know, I think when a bank like Wells Fargo, really, which makes plenty of money, I think when they push their people to hit certain sales targets so that their people then go out and create illegal fake accounts that they then charge people for, I think that there should be some consequences to that. I don't think that's the way capitalism runs. And the way the Republicans used to be, capitalism was like the be-all, end-all. And capitalism requires sort of a fair, balanced, and I hate to use those words, road for people to play in.
So is there charter, sort of like the SEC, to protect us against insider trading and things of that nature? This would be to protect the you and me.
Yeah, that's pretty much what they do. And they do it pretty well out of D.C. And I have to tell you, I was the biggest skeptic when it started.
Yeah, I remember you talking
Absolutely.
About that. Yeah.
And now I have to say they've done some good. They've done some things that are a little bit probably too far off the rails, but most of what they've done has been really, really helpful. And they've provided a place for consumers to go. For example, in as we were getting through the recession, the CFPB worked with a couple of the other big government institutions to really start to crack down and help people who are getting caught in the mortgage mess.
Right.
So it's just been very, very helpful. So
and has Mulvaney gone backwards on this yet? Mulvaney, by the way, is also the budget guy for Trump.
That's right, because he has time for two jobs.
Yeah, of course.
So here's what happened just this week. So in September, and I'm going to just give you an example. In September, the CFPB fined Nationwide Biweekly Administration, which is an Ohio company, and they found that they misled 100,000 mortgage customers. So there's this kind of a scam out there, and I've talked about this for a long time, where if you actually prepay your mortgage or make two half payments per month, you'll end up cutting like between 8 and 10 years off your mortgage, depending on the interest rate and when you start doing that.
Sure.
And there are companies that actually pay you. They make you pay them to do that for you. And you don't need to do that, but they do. And they mislead people all the time about it. So the judge ordered this company, Nationwide Biweekly Administration, to pay $8 million in penalties. So it had all been done. The CFPB found it. Everything was signed and ready to go. And all they had to do, all the CFPB had to do was collect the cash. And last week, Mulvaney's like basically first order from the CFPB, they filed a two-sentence brief that basically said, withdraw the submission, and they no longer are going to take a position on whether Nationwide should put up the cash.
So now it's up to these people to sue them?
Yeah. Now basically, all the CFPB had to do was collect the $8 million and redistribute it to the people that had been misled.
In a decision that had already been made.
And they just decided they're not going to do that.
All right. These are the problems that you don't need. There are plenty of ways to stimulate business and to make sure the rich get richer, if you want to be cynical about it, without breaking the law or making it harder on regular people. So that's the whole point of that. When we come back, do I need Bitcoin? Should I have some Bitcoin rattling around in my digital pants? Stand by for that. And also, what will this move of the Israeli or the American embassy in Israel do to the international, the world economy? Stand by. Elise will answer all these questions and any staff questions as well from those of us on the staff who aren't already incredibly wealthy. Time Magazine's Person of the Year, the hashtag #MeToo movement. Women speaking up and speaking out. I like that choice.
I think we called that yesterday, didn't we?
You and Mary did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Grzanich, got to give him credit.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, the three of you did.
Yep.
And you did too, Steve.
I actually said Gilbert Gottfried, and I couldn't have been more wrong. So weird. At 7:25, we go back to Elise Glink, who will now tell me if I need Bitcoin. Do I need Bitcoin?
I don't know. It's been interesting to watch it go up. Bitcoin is up over 12,000. It's moving towards 13,000 per coin. Of course, there's no physical coin. I think everybody's imagining like a
nice little unit, gold. Right? It's a unit of Bitcoin.
Yes. I don't even really know if that's correct to call it that. But yes, it is a whole bunch of zeros and ones put together. And it's you can't really see it, you can't touch it, but you can spend it. And
right, who determines the value of Bitcoin? For instance, if I want to go in to my local 7-Eleven and buy a chocolate milk, and it costs a couple of bucks, how do I know how much that is in Bitcoin?
You don't. At least I don't. I mean, because it's changing so fast, right? There's just another report that came across the transom that now Bitcoin is 13,000 based on early trading in Europe.
All right, so if we don't know the value of Bitcoin, how do we use it?
So it's really, okay, so there's two things to think about. One is Bitcoin, and I am by no means the expert of all experts in Bitcoin.
Okay.
I think I belong to, there are two different camps. One camp thinks that Bitcoin is going to, and other cryptocurrencies, because there are other types of these technologies that are out there that are coming up and that people are trying to get other people to bid on. And for the most part, I've watched Bitcoin and, you know, God bless the Winklevoss twins, because whatever they missed on Facebook, they're getting, you know, they took whatever they got from Zuckerberg and they poured it into Bitcoin a while ago, and now they're billionaires. So good for them. But, you know, so you can, there are ways to spend Bitcoin by parceling out a chunk of it and sending it places. And there are other places that you can go to actually buy it, like trading stores, for example. Not a normal trading store, but a Bitcoin trading store. But there's something very different to pay more attention to.
But this is for the super rich right now. This is not for you and me.
Well, it wasn't originally. So originally, when this was just, I don't know, sort of beginning, which was not all that long ago, you could mine Bitcoin. So they used a term that, you know, like you mine for gold or you mine for diamonds, you mine Bitcoin. And the way that you would do that is you would basically lend the creators of Bitcoin. By the way, nobody knows who that is. You would lend them your computer systems and you would run complex algorithms. And that was your payment for mining these Bitcoins. And you could, you know, mine away for, I don't know, days and weeks, and you might get a Bitcoin. So we had, you know, closer to home, the president of Best Money Moves, that's my company, Angus Carroll, his son was mining Bitcoin when this all got started. And Angus had no idea what he was doing in the basement, because this guy's, you know, his son's kind of a computer genius. But he noticed his electricity bills had tripled, literally.
Because the computer was running nonstop.
Nonstop. And then he had networked a whole bunch of other computers together in order to mine Bitcoin. So, you know, Angus says to his son, like, stop that. What are you doing?
And the what's in it for Bitcoin at that point was the combination of the computer power of having all these miners?
Right. They had to solve certain, I guess they had to solve certain complex algorithms.
So they needed
problems.
All the computer power they could find.
Exactly, and smart enough people to know how to run it.
It just makes my head hurt thinking about it.
There are a whole bunch of legitimate trading companies that are looking now, and I mean financial services companies as well, that are looking at Bitcoin, and there's talk about regulating it and legislating it and putting up a proper, like a board of Bitcoin, like you have, you know, the
But this seems
the options
to me,
exchange.
This seems to me like something that could go from $13,000 to $4 in about 2 days.
It definitely could. They're actually setting up, though, a futures. So that's what kind of where I was going. So there's the CBOE Global Markets, right? So that's based here in Chicago, is rolling out its first Bitcoin futures product this weekend on Sunday. And the CME Group, which is a rival to the CBO, is launching later in December. And the whole point of the Bitcoin futures will be to allow investors to bet on the future price of this digital cryptocurrency, and it's, you know, that's sort of the latest thing. And once that happens, they feel like it might be easier because it's not only betting on the future that it's going to go up, but you could also short it. And that, to your point, means it could drop from $13,000 to $4 overnight. I mean, I don't know that it will, and I'm not saying it will, but it could. And the corollary to Bitcoin is something called blockchain technology. And a lot of people think blockchain is much more interesting and has much more commercial,
future.
Bigger value.
Yeah.
So it's worth watching.
Yeah, and there are various purveyors of the blockchain technology as well. Then the idea is to drill down and find out which companies have the best staying power and go invest in them.
Right. Exactly.
Israel. Let's talk about Israel for a second. If the United States moves its embassy to Jerusalem, the great city of Jerusalem, claimed by Christians, Jews, and Muslims, all claiming Jerusalem. And we say symbolically that this is the capital of Israel. This could start great problems, specifically in the Arab world, and great tensions between the Israelis and the Jews that haven't really gone off recently. That aside, politics aside, what's it going to do to the economy?
Oh, I don't think there's anything good that'll come out of this. I'm a little bit negative on it. I got to say, Steve, I'm a little worried because Middle East is the home of oil, right? I mean, so this is where, you know, the price of oil has guided so much of our economy, the positives and negatives over time, that, you know, if you see a disruption in the oil market, if you see a disruption that starts to then, you know, because politically there will be ramifications and you start to see craziness break out in a real way all over the world, I think it just destabilizes things further, and it makes everybody nervous. And you don't have a happy economy when people are really nervous. So my sense would be disrupt oil, disrupt how people are feeling good about things right now for the first time in a long time, and pain will follow very quickly.
It's Elise Glink at thinkglink.com, T-H-I-N-K-G-L-I-N-K. It's sponsored by our friends at Grandview Homes, and we always appreciate the education. I hope you have a delightful day.
I shall. You do the same.
All right, see ya. That's Elise. We'll come back with a big story in a moment, and then good gifts for your dog for Christmas, because you know how tough your dog is to shop for. And what's it going to mean to you with the new Trump tax plan based on what you earn? We have some examples from Business Insider magazine and the potential positives and negatives. At 732 and a half, let's come back with your news next on 720 WGN.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Well, we got a bunch of dog lovers on this show.
With the kids jingle bells.
And,
or dog tolerators.
I love dogs. I haven't had one in a couple of years, but I do. Dave, you're particularly fond of Ozzy.
Yes, I am.
I have dog gifts. Now, you have to buy a gift for your sister's dog, don't you?
I do. And we already have a couple, but I need more because she likes, you know, Biscuits, my nephew. And Catherine and Patrick are her niece and nephew, and she likes the lot to be even.
Oh, really?
Yes. If Catherine's opening X amount of gifts, Biscuit needs
to. Do they rotate? Like, does it go Catherine, Patrick, Biscuit?
Oh, it is. It's in every other.
Wow.
Yeah, it's because we like to watch the display unwrapping.
If your sister ever questions how much your family loves her, that's a special kind of crazy.
I know.
So they must love her a lot.
You know, my dog demands that the gift be wrapped. He loves unwrapping
presents.
Bacon?
Loves unwrapping presents.
No, Biscuit likes unwrapping too, though, Steve.
Biscuit
they
doesn't.
They do. They tear into it like a nut. Like they rip. They do.
They don't. No.
You have
they
to
don't.
See it.
They just like to tear stuff up. How about a blue velvet coat? A blue velvet coat. Personally, I'm against dressing up animals, but a blue velvet coat would be very styling. Comes in any size you need, whether it's a Chihuahua or a German Shepherd. How much would you think this would cost?
$120
$45
Oh.
Really? That's
$45
That's pretty a reasonable good. Jacket.
When's the last time you bought a blue velvet coat, and what did it cost you?
$5,000, and it belonged to Elvis. Up Country is the website. UP Up Country.
I don't know that velvet is practical because I feel like the hair would show. Like if you shed, if you're a dog that sheds, you'll stick to velvet.
I think the dog is just going to go, "Why am I wearing a blue velvet coat?" Dogs love treats like the rest of us, but how about gourmet dog biscuits shaped like little maple leaves?
That's festive.
With a white paw print stamped on the front.
Why maple leaves?
Well, just because it's fall and wintry.
I feel like that's Canadian something. Canadian.
The only reason I bring this up is because I love the name of the website, Woofables.
Oh, yeah.
I like that's good.
Do you know Woofables? W-O-O-F-A-B-L-E-S. Woofables.
You can woof them down.
You know, Steve, you mentioned a paw print.
Uh-huh.
Can I tell you really quickly what I did yesterday?
I know what you did yesterday. Tell the audience what you did yesterday.
Okay. If anyone knows Katie, please don't tell her that she's getting this from Biscuit. John DeCasse, who's a dog lover, gave me a paw print ornament making kit to so that I could get Biscuit's paw in a cast. And it can, so we can get
and
it to
the print
Katie.
Could be replicated on a bulb.
It'll hang on a tree. Yeah. So yesterday I had to coordinate with his dog camp people because they don't just let you walk in and like talk to the dog. And I said, "Okay, can somebody bring Biscuit out for 5 minutes? So I'm outside. It's cold.
Maybe Biscuit was in class.
I know. Well, I don't know the curriculum there.
Yeah.
I was kneading the material. You have to knead it for a minute and then roll it out with a rolling pin. And then the guy was helping me, and I'm using a water bottle because the paw is supposed to be wet, and I'm spraying his water, his little paw, and then I'd wipe it, and then he'd put it on the ground and it'd get dirty again. And so I'd have to spray it, wipe it again, and then he'd put the paw on the ground. So our imprint, once we finally got it into the cast, is a dirty imprint. But it's almost like I'm thinking of it like finger paint.
And it's authentic.
It's his paw, a little bit of dirt on it. And so.
Did you interrupt? Which class did you interrupt? Did you interrupt butt sniffing or rolling in dead things?
You know, at dog school, they don't look kindly upon that. You could have been a stranger trying to take her.
Well, I know. That's why I had the owner. Stranger I was danger. Like, hey, stranger I'm going to come. You know. And so this guy, Joel, brought him out. And then, you know, Biscuit was like, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Don't tell mommy." You know, the whole thing.
I have one question. You seem annoyed that he put his paw down.
Yes.
Okay. What was he supposed to do?
I wanted him to hold it up.
Hold
and keep
his
it clean.
Paw up in the air, understanding. I know. Understanding completely what the process was. How about Malin and Getz dog shampoo? Make bath time more pleasant for both you and your dog with hydrating shampoo blended with natural botanicals and amino acids. It washes away dog dirt without making the skin feel dry or irritated. It's a groomer's favorite, and it's available at Amazon for $28.
Oh, there you go.
You got to be careful buying shampoo for your dog.
You do?
Yeah. You don't want to do anything that's going to dry out their skin. You have to make sure that their natural oils are preserved. It's very, you're not really supposed to give your dog a bath that often.
What about that dry shampoo, though? That's what my kids use on their dogs.
We have dry shampoo here.
Yeah,
we have
that's good stuff.
We have dry shampoo
that?
On the list. Dry shampoo from Bark Bar. Bark Bar dry shampoo for dogs, $10. The lemon drop scented formula refreshes your dog's fur while eliminating the problem of trying to get the dog to take a bath.
Because dogs are stinky.
Okay, but you're talking about a gift, all right? Mm-hmm. Do you want shampoo as a gift? Do you want soap? I mean,
you do understand.
You give your dad soap.
What does a dog care?
Well, yeah, that's soap on a rope.
But
that's
you do
different.
Understand that the order of control here is humans, then dogs. So, therefore, you would be able to get them whatever you want. They're just along for the ride and the biscuit.
I see.
That depends the household you live in, Steve.
Apparently. Fresh Patch. Fresh Patch is literally a box of grass to teach your dog how to go potty.
It helped me learn how to mow.
House training a pet can be difficult. Fresh Patch, disposable cardboard container filled with real hydroponically grown grass.
So now here's the question. Do you put the patch of grass inside and train them?
Because
a problem.
You got to make sure you got to take them outside and get them used to that whole process of going out the door and going outside.
I remember when the last dog I had that I had to train, I remember I would go outside and go in the yard and then rub my nose in it and just to teach the dog.
That could work.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? That's going to come in handy. We have an older dog who we have an older dog that's we have a big deck and we don't want to make her go all the way down. So in the winter, we would like to put that out there so she can do her business on the deck.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
Yeah. My sister lives in a high rise and there's a service you can get where on the balcony, they'll put a fake grass thing out there so you don't have to take him out every day. You could just put him out in the winter. But
thank God my dad's dead. This whole conversation would kill him.
I know. It's like a potty service, and they'll come and switch it out or whatever, except for Biscuit refused to go on it. So
Fresh Patch, the Night Dog LED collar for $12, a glowing LED collar at night to keep your dog safe. If your dog's out, that seems
like a good idea.
Yeah.
The Rad Dog Travel Bag is a backpack for your dog.
Oh, my sister wants one of these so badly.
Yeah, it's a backpack for your dog. It goes
How
on sort of
it?
Like a backpack, $35.
Oh, boy.
I can maybe. She
both
wants
of our
really
dogs,
bad.
Both of our dogs went bit mining with us, so we needed to take a lot of supplies.
How about a dog bowl, a portable dog bowl that folds up into smaller than the size of your palm?
We have a folding dog bowl.
How small does it fold, Dave? Because the Rad Dog collapsible pocket bowl for $12 is smaller than your hand.
But my dog
might not be smaller than my hand.
My dogs drink more than amount I can fit in my hand.
It unfolds to the size of a normal dog bowl.
I found a really good.
And no, I don't know why I'm whispering.
I found a really good dog bowl thing for Murrow. Murrow, if you're listening, turn away so I don't want you to hear what you're getting. Yeah. But it looks like a water bottle, like you would take an exercise water bottle. It's a little bit bigger, holds a little bit more water, and on the top
it
looks like a bowl. And then you squeeze the bottle, and water goes up into the bowl so that they can drink it when you're out, jogging with them or at the park or hike, whatever you're doing outside with them where they need water, where they're. Wouldn't be water. It's a very cool thing. It was like $19.
Steve, I saw that and I thought earlier, like a month ago, and I thought if I get Steve for Secret Santa, I'm getting him this.
That would be
perfect.
I did not
get him, so I didn't buy it. But
I have one more here, and you're gonna have to sell me hard on this: the Roughwear float coat.
Oh, from They Swim.
Yeah, $80.
Yeah,
to put on your dog so your dog can swim.
Yeah, Biscuit has a life vest.
Well, I have a question.
Seriously,
does it have a handle?
Yes.
Yes.
Then
back.
I would get it.
Yeah.
But not for the floating. I just to be able to pick them up like a suitcase whenever I need to.
Okay, but here's the.
What about the dog paddle?
Yeah.
Come on. Well, like Biscuit's a mini English bulldog. They're all head and their little arms aren't long enough to
Do we know that for sure?
Oh yeah, he swims, so he has a life. He has that jacket.
No, but do you try to have him swim without his life jacket?
They put flippers on him.
I believe she has. I don't know. His whole front half sinks.
You could put water.
He's a dog. He'll survive.
He could not go swimming, but
this
he really
is
likes
the most
the
ridiculous conversation,
right?
I've ever heard.
$80 for the rough wear float coat.
That's kind of expensive.
Oh, but that's it does have a handle.
I'll take the handle. The handle for $5.
So you would like dog handles?
I want dog handles.
Yes, a handle you would put on your dog so when they're not moving, you can just pick them up.
Let's put you over here. Yeah. And can you hold these briefs?
It's 754. We'll actually get to something maybe even more important, how much you're going to pay under the new tax plan. And in the meantime, I hope you'll learn something from dog gifts.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, kiss me good.
We are live to Channel 9. Dean Richards is at Channel 9 because that's where he works.
That's where I am in the morning.
And
I'm really excited this morning, Steve, because we just closed. You know, we've talked about this before, how when I'm not on the air, I'm a celebrity real estate agent.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we just closed on a new home for Dennis Quaid, the actor. We just closed on a deal, a house that he bought in Brentwood Hills, California.
Okay.
$3.9 million.
Was it a honey?
Honey of a deal, as we like to say. 5 bedrooms, 4.5 baths, 4,100 square feet, swimming pool, everything. $3.9 million.
There's a lot of money in show business.
I don't want to say anything, but I'm thinking I need to cut a better deal with these people that I represent. Doesn't it seem like my commission on that should be more than $138?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. $3.9 million. I would think your commission would be $1.5.
Yeah, that's not right.
You're a little on the low end.
I am not going to do these contracts on the web anymore.
You know, the most expensive home in the country was sold recently. I think closed on in the past few days. In California, $110 million. That's one house.
That's a lot of house.
By the way.
That's a lot of price for one house.
2 bedrooms, 1.5 baths.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good. I do have, if anyone's interested right now, I have Adam Levine's house. He just put it back on the market in the Beverly Crest area.
Okay.
$18.9 million.
How are the school districts, you know?
Not that good.
All right. As you know, this is how this
sketchy.
Normally works.
Let's just say sketchy.
I'm going to my wallet now. By the way, do you know my American Express card got stolen yesterday?
Really?
Yeah.
I love when someone says something like that, and then the next person, which I almost just did, said, where'd you leave it? Where's the last place you used it? If I knew that, it wouldn't be lost.
Yeah, and it wasn't stolen. The number was stolen. I got skimmed, apparently, at a gas station.
Oh. Got to be careful.
All right, I got 33, 53, 73, 93. I'm going through the cash in my wallet right now on this Adam Levine house. 113, 133, 53, 73, 93.
You're walking around with a lot of cash.
94. Well, I have to. I don't have a credit card. 94. I have $234 in my wallet, which I'm willing to make you an offer.
Cash.
Of $230 in cash right now. I need $4.
For this $18.9 million house.
It's the only offer you have.
It is the only one that we have so far. I'd like to wrap all this up by the end of the year, if possible. So.
$230 in cash. I could close by 8:20.
Are you just talking about Dean's commission?
No, no, no. This is the whole house.
Yeah, that's the actual price. My commission would be like 38 cents on this.
Yeah. So you'll present that to the buyer and let me know.
I'm going to present that to Adam. Levine.
And let's see how many of Maroon 5 actually curse at me when they hear that. All right, Dean Richards, when we come back, most tweeted about TV shows and movies of the year.
Yes.
John Mayer hospitalized in an urgent manner. What's going on there? Spike Lee with something going on in town, and not involving the Bulls. And Dean's review of Elf the Musical at the Paramount Theater, the beautiful Paramount Theater.
It is beautiful.
In Aurora. All that when we come back, 8:17, Mary does this first.
You'll be calling his name
Back to Dean at Channel 9. Is your Christmas shopping done yet?
I have not even thought about it yet.
Can't decide what to give me.
Well, I know you like the fruitcake, but I don't want to be so predictable with something like that. So I might get you a box of salami.
I was at a band called A Box of Salami.
I know. That's why I thought it would be a nice gift. I'm thoughtful that way.
Hey, can we do something about the graphic you guys are running at Channel 9 all the time that says a farewell to Mark like he's dying?
I thought of that myself this morning.
I mean, you know, he's not dying. He'll be on this show tomorrow. Mark Zappels will be on this show tomorrow. And then on Friday, he does his final newscast and he retires. He goes off to Montana and he chases moose.
Right, right. But he won't be on WGN anymore, so...
A farewell to Mark. I mean, you guys aren't planning on killing him, are you?
Gotta tune in.
All right, let's talk about 2017's most tweeted about TV shows and movies.
Do you mean Mark's final broadcast that immediately follows our special holiday presentation of Family Classics on Friday?
Is that right? Oh, how about the timing of that?
Is that what you're talking about?
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 7 to 9 Family Classics on the original set. And
so the original set, then?
Well, it's most of the original set. We didn't...
Do you have the books that were on that set?
We do have the books, yeah. We do have many of the books, and we have many of the original things, the original chair.
The original dog and cat that were on the set?
Yeah,
well?
Frasier didn't use a dog. Roy used the dog. Mm. And I don't know what...
The original theme music?
Original theme music.
And do you know what that theme music is? Because I've never heard it other than Family Classics.
I do not know the name of it, no. Mm. I can look it up.
Do you have the original band that played then?
We do. Most of them are about 150 years old apiece. A little difficult for them to play the horns now.
And when will the Family Classics be on again?
That's going to be Friday night from 7 to 9 following the assassination of Mark Zappelsa.
I'll see your plug, and I'll raise you one plug to New Year's Eve. John, how do we get tickets to our New Year's Eve show?
We go to Eventbrite.com. You click on Cochrane New Year's Eve at the Tivoli in Downers Grove.
You assassinating anybody at that show?
Nope. Just making people laugh.
All right. Surprises.
Yeah, that's true. That's a fair point.
Hey, I want to thank the people. I've been getting a lot of texts and emails about the Family Classics, especially this one that came from the 630 area code. I love your weather forecasts on WGN.
Yeah, I think your weather's one of your best things.
Thank you very
much. Yeah. I like the way you do Just the Way You Are, too. Both of those are strong.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
2017's most tweeted about TV shows and movies.
What do you think the most tweeted about TV show might be?
This Is Us.
It was not This Is Us.
Really?
It was actually Game of Thrones.
Oh, sure, that makes sense.
Game of Thrones. Yeah, but... Sure. This Is Us did turn up in a very high position. Mm-hmm. This is actually, This Us is not in the top five at all, is what I meant to say. I was thinking about Stranger Things.
I think This Is Us, people were crying. They couldn't tweet while they were crying.
They were paralyzed. Their fingers were paralyzed, unable to tweet. But,
all right, well, what were the top five?
Game of Thrones, Stranger Things, Big Brother, 13 Reasons Why, and Saturday Night Live. And, and the most tweeted about movies.
I can tell you the most tweeted about 2018 TV show right now. For next year, I can tell you what it's going to be. Hmm. Donald Trump's impeachment hearings. Number one.
With the bullet.
Yeah. And what were you saying?
Most tweeted movies. Wonder Woman was most.
Have we ever figured out how to say her name?
Gal Gadot.
Obviously, we haven't. Again.
Gal Gadot.
Yeah, it's not Godot, but it's...
Godot. What is it?
It's I think Godot.
Get up and go?
I believe it's Godot.
Well, she is Israeli, and I believe you have to sound like you're choking to say her name. Gal.
She's a big star. Isn't it time we just start calling her by one name?
Yeah, Gal.
Gal.
Yeah.
Her movie was the most tweeted about of the year. Dunkirk was after that.
Really?
Spider-Man, which, by the way, may be my number one movie of 2017 right now.
Spider-Man?
Dunkirk.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Dunkirk was underrated and underseen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also just saw the Steven Spielberg movie, The Post.
Oh, I got to see that.
Meryl Streep.
I can't wait for that movie.
Tom Hanks. It's pretty awesome. That
about
one,
the Pentagon Papers,
it's
right?
It's about the release of the Washington Post struggling with... whether or not they should release the Pentagon Papers.
I am such a news nerd.
A real, it's, hey, you know, talk about relatable, a story about freedom of the press.
Yeah.
What do
How
you
about
know?
That?
What do you know?
Dunkirk, President Trump hates freedom of the press.
Spider-Man Homecoming, Justice League, and the scary clown movie It.
Okay.
Were the top five most tweeted about movies.
I would have thought what was the horror movie that was the big breakout hit of this year done by the guy that's the comedian who is half of the comedy team?
Oh, Key and Peele. Jordan Peele's movie, Get Out.
Yeah, I would have thought that would have been huge in the Twitter situation.
It's huge, but it did not make the top 10 most tweeted about movies. That was kind of a sleeper. It didn't.
And that's why John Mayer is in the hospital. What happened to John Mayer?
Emergency appendectomy.
Oh boy, that can be deadly.
Slash, Katy Perry may have beaten him up. Finally,
punched him right in the kidneys.
Right in the appendectomy.
Yeah,
right
so
in the appendix.
Is he going to be okay, little Tommy?
He's going to be okay, little Stevie. He's recovering in a hospital in New Orleans right now.
That's my mother, when she was but a child, had to be rushed to the hospital for a stomach ache that just wouldn't go away.
Mm-mm.
And they found that she had been internally poisoned by her own appendix.
Oh, wow.
And she nearly died. So it's a big deal. You, that appendectomy thing, when your appendix goes bad, you want to get that bad boy out of there.
You don't want to mess around with your appendectomy area.
Yeah, happened to my son, too. And I was just like, oh, you're fine. It's just stomach ache. You know, for like a week.
Is there any visible sign when that happens?
No, your stomach, it just hurts.
Just
your right side. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird. Finally brought him in and oops.
And John, to answer your question, the family classic song.
Yes.
Is called Moviescape.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's a great.
We'll continue with the ADD report now.
I just looked that up, by the way.
Moviescape.
Somebody didn't just tweet that to me. You heard my phone ding. I actually did the research and looked it up myself.
I will tell you this in regards to the appendectomy thing, and Mary, you'll back me up on this. We as a generation have handled this a little differently, and every time my kids had any sort of health issue at all, I just went straight to the emergency room. Sniffles, get in the car!
Not me.
Oops. Now, you know what I did with Amy? I still feel guilty about this. Amy broke her leg when she was like two. Maybe three, I guess. She's probably three. And I was on the road for something. I remember Maureen calling, and I'm going, oh, it's fine. She fell down. She's a kid, and she fell down. Come home, she got a cast on her leg.
Mm.
Yeah, it felt good then. Mm. Yeah.
Hello,
Dad
John.
Of the year.
DCFS.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, said you're out of town, or I'd want to know how that leg got broken.
Well, the kid broken bone thing, though, 4 hours later, the cast is off, and she's running around. You know, they have a cartoon healing.
Yeah, that's true.
Chester Bennington, who and what happened?
Chester Bennington was with the group Linkin Park. Remember, you may recall he committed suicide last July, and the autopsy results were just released yesterday, and it was found he'd had a history of drug use, a history of alcoholism, several previous suicide attempts. So everyone was, you know, focused on what the official cause of death was going to be. And what they found was that there was just a trace of alcohol, a couple of beers in his system, no drugs at all. They did not release the official cause of death. It was by hangings. But the people wondering if drugs and alcohol were involved, it was only minuscule.
In all seriousness, mental health and depression, the greatest scourge in this country that's underreported and really a lack of understanding, it can be literally deadly. You don't snap out of it. You don't walk it off. It doesn't matter how much money you're making. It doesn't matter how pretty you are. It can happen to anybody. So when you get confused about why rich folks or rock stars end up killing themselves or why Robin Williams killed himself, it's the cruelty of these mental disorders, whatever they may be. And we need more money, more research thrown at this as fast as we possibly can to try to get people the help they need.
Yeah, and very consistent with suicide cases that you read about all the time. When there are previous suicide attempts, pay attention to that. That needs to be taken seriously. You can't just, you know, kind of slough it off and thought, you know, although they were depressed for last week, everything's okay now.
And listen, if somebody's really depressed, the best thing you can do as a friend or a family member is say, tell me what's going on. Talk to me about how you're feeling.
Listen,
don't solve it. Don't try to solve it. Just listen to why they're hurting and volunteer to get them help and take them, drive them, whatever. These are all painful lessons that have been learned through a long time. You know, listen, I've battled depression my whole life. I mean, you know, and people need to be straight up about it.
Yep. So Chester Bennington had 6 kids. They're going to live with that for the rest of
their
lives.
Yeah, it's awful. It's awful.
Their dad hung themselves. That's awful.
Spike Lee in town doing what?
He was in town apparently secretly filming the play that was at the Steppenwolf Theater.
What do you mean, bootlegging it?
This past September. No, I mean, apparently they arranged it with Steppenwolf and Amazon Studios to film this play that was called Passover, which was about 2 African-American men just kind of hanging out in the hood, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It was an adaptation, a modern-day adaptation of Waiting for Godot. But
Gal Gadot?
Not Gal Gadot. This play became a lightning rod of controversy when the Sun-Times critic, Hedy Weiss, gave it a review that some people labeled the review itself as being racially insensitive.
Oh, stop it.
So the play became this flashpoint of controversy. Apparently, that caught the attention of Spike Lee. They brought the cameras in, filmed this play, and it's apparently going to be shown at the Sundance Film Festival in January. But how interesting that, you know, it's Spike Lee, it's a film crew, all at the Steppenwolf, and they somehow secretly record all of this to turn it into a movie.
It's wild. Doesn't it feel like there's some sort of agenda there we're not aware of? Or what do we I guess we don't know that.
I don't know about the agenda. I think he's just, you know, was intrigued by the story, maybe intrigued by the controversy about the review that came up as a result of it. But it's pretty interesting that you can, you know, stage a production. It wasn't in the main theater of Steppenwolf. It was in one of their upstairs theaters. But still, a couple of hundred people were in the audience. Nobody noticed a film camera?
Well, but you know this because you've been on sets all the time. You're on sets all the time. You can shoot movie-quality film now on a camera the size of your hand.
Yeah, I suppose. I suppose.
Elf the Musical, what'd you think?
I enjoyed it. Just opened at the Paramount in Aurora. It's the musical adaptation of the Will Ferrell film from 2003. I didn't realize that that movie was that many years ago, but the charming story of the little baby who crawls into Santa's sack while he's delivering gifts, is accidentally taken back to the North Pole, is raised by elves. He turns out to be, you know, towering, you know, 6 feet something or other, and is told that he's not really an elf, but was raised by them. So he sets out to find his real parents back in New York City. It's a very nice production. The actor who plays the Will Ferrell character, Buddy the Elf, is very good song and dance. He doesn't have that, you know, that quality that Will Ferrell has, where it's sort of
impish goofiness.
You don't know whether to take this Buddy the Elf as serious or not. He doesn't really hit that Will Ferrell note of that impishness. But it doesn't kill it at all. I mean, this is a big, huge production with big, beautiful, colorful sets. The Paramount really just throws everything in the kitchen sink at you during the show with some surprises at the end of the second act that everyone's going to enjoy. It's almost 2.5 hours with an intermission. The kids that were in the audience were completely engaged in the show.
That's good.
So I think that says something. There are some adult double entendres that didn't seem like they were appropriate in a family show. There were some very specific New York references because this opened on Broadway that would make sense to a New York audience. Kind of fell flat with the audience that I saw it with over the weekend. But I still enjoyed it. It's still a lot of fun. You leave with a big smile on your face.
And hi to Mr. Jarvis and everybody out there at
Jarvis,
the
Paramount. All good folks out at the Paramount. So I'm recommending it. It's out there until January the 7th.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
Ho, ho, ho.
And right back at you. We'll come back with a big story in a moment. And then Connor Murphy from your Chicago Blackhawks on 720 WGN.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1,
The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
Bank on the Blackhawks from MB Financial Bank on Monday. We will be live at the new MB Financial Bank Center where the Hawks practice and where so many of you are going to have a chance to skate if you haven't already. And MB's giving you a chance to win a ride on an ice resurfacer, a pregame tour of the United Center. A couple of tickets for the Hawks and the Florida Panthers December 12th. Go to WGNradio.com/contest to enter. All courtesy of MB Financial Bank. MB means business. And good morning to you, Connor Murphy. Connor, are you with me?
Yeah, I'm here. What's up, guys?
Hey, man. How you doing?
Hey, Connor.
Good morning.
Not bad.
Nice goal the other night. Looks like you're getting more comfortable every day.
Yeah. It's been good. It's been fun so far.
What do you like best about this team as far as the dressing room side of this goes? Is there a guy you hang with? Is it fun on the road? What's the best part of that?
Yeah, we have our routines, and guys have their groups going to dinner and things like that. It's not really too crazy. Just you get in, and whether you have a nap or not, you go to dinner and come back and watch some TV. So nothing too exciting, but we got a lot of good guys and not really too cliquey on this team. Everyone kind of hangs out with everyone. So you just go to your meals and hang out and have a good time.
It can be a little high schoolish, right? With some teams where certain guys will hang and other guys don't feel like they're so welcome.
I mean, yeah, you get that a little bit. I mean, especially hockey, you get guys from all over the world. So whether it's language barriers or different things, guys are more comfortable, whether it's on their own or with a certain teammate. So there's a little bit of that, but it's not like there's high school drama, just a little bit of groups the odd time.
Yeah, if it goes high school, we got a real problem. Yeah. Dude, yeah. You're not sitting with me at lunch.
Exactly.
What, Connor, what's your sense in your first season with the Blackhawks? What is going on now with this team? How you feel they're kind of fighting through this, what's been a bit of a power outage as far as the power play and also just a tough time scoring goals?
Yeah, it's been frustrating. I think every team goes through a little bit of their troubles different parts of the year, but for us it seems to be a little bit of puck play and scoring, and we've had unreal goaltending that's actually covered up a little bit of lapses we've had, and it's kept some of the goals against down a little bit, but it's hard. I mean, scoring's tough. You got a lot of teams give us their best games. We played lately, and they've been checking hard, especially a lot of these bigger Western Conference teams, and yeah, it's a challenge, and if things aren't meshing as well as they usually are offensively, it's tough to get goals and to get on top early in games. So it's been tough. It's been close games that haven't gone our way lately, but I think guys have been working hard to try to overcome it and playing, whether it's with new line mates or different things like that. It'll give guys a spark, and hopefully we can kind of get on track here.
How closely do you guys keep an eye on the standings in your division? I know it's so early, but you've got a really, really tough division, and it seems like every time you look up, Nashville's winning again. Winnipeg lost last night, but they've been winning. Do you guys follow that?
Yeah, we have TVs on and standings up every day in the room and highlights, so you kind of keep track and see how teams are doing, but I don't think you really pay as much close attention to it as you do the latter part of the year. So you kind of just keep it in your back pocket and know to make sure you don't slip away or to see if you can spring ahead of some teams. And you always know that the divisional games they really mean more points than just the two that that are up for grabs. Because with the other team losing, you know, the team winning, usually you spring ahead pretty far, and you got to know to take advantage of those ones. But
yeah, those are 4-point really, games, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. You usually call them 4-point games, but they mean a lot. They just, I mean, it's usually a little more animosity toward that game to try to beat out your divisional teams.
You know, Coach Q is a regular on this show, and you know, he always talks about win the shift, win your ice time.
Yeah,
you know, manage the puck, win your ice time. You'll win the game if you do that. What's the adjustment been like for you from beginning to now? Has your role changed from what you thought it might be, or is this pretty much what you thought you'd be doing?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's changed a little bit in the way that I'm playing on the left side now, which is my offside being a right shot. So that's it was a little bit of adjustment at first, but I've done it for multiple games now, and it's feeling comfortable. And it's been nice to feel more comfortable as the games have gone on, and getting a feel for partners and teammates and the way we play, and trying to make plays and help the team in any way. But it's just been that's probably the only adjustment lately, just playing on the offside and trying to get things going.
The MB Arena there where you guys practice, I mean, that's got to be great having a facility like that.
It's crazy. Yeah, I've never seen anything like that, really. We didn't have the similar facilities like that where I was in Arizona the last few years. So it's pretty amazing. And I've gone in there in a couple off days to just hang out. We have an unbelievable room and got the hot tubs and steamers, saunas, and we got it all.
I have to ask you, you scored your first goal as a Blackhawk against the Flyers in Philadelphia. Your dad's an assistant coach with that team, and I know you've probably been asked this a lot. I know he has to be stoic about it. He had to be excited for you, right? Did he say anything to you? I know it was a
nice shot, kid.
Yeah, what happens? What's the exchange between you and your dad after that?
It's pretty much just as far as that. Just says nice shot, nice goal, then moves on to something maybe I should do defensively or work on something else. He's still my dad, so he treats it the same way as I have most of my life, which is cool. But it was cool. We had our mom's trip that week too. So we had my mom was able to be there, and which was funny for her because she ends up flying out to Chicago for the mom's trip, and the first place we go is back to Philly where my dad's coaching.
Yeah, there you go.
Most
yeah.
of the year. So it was cool. It's cool to have them, and funny for her to be wearing a Blackhawks jersey against him.
You know, as one of the taller guys in the league, somebody brought this up the other day, who's got a tall kid going through a growth spurt. I don't know when you started to pop, you know, height-wise, but is there any sort of special thing you'd say to parents with a lanky kid that's trying to learn the game?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, like, for kids, I mean, learning the game, it's all the same, just making the whole work ethic thing and making sure that kids are really loving it and putting in the time and the effort. But I've learned that when I was younger, when I hit a growth spurt, I started having a couple injuries just because my strength didn't keep up with the spurt of growth. So the big thing I would say is to make sure you're doing the right amount of training. When kids start working out at a young age, they want to go in with their middle school and high school buddies and start ripping bench press and heavy squats. And you got to make sure that you're doing it the right way. And not all about just lifting weight. It's about getting that core strength going. So I think for taller, whether you're a lanky kid or whatever, getting older, it's really important to have that strength in feet and core, and having the right trainer to help you do that.
Talking to Connor Murphy, before we let you go, the MB Financial listener question, good for an autographed Blackhawk puck. Terry Kazupski asked, do you think the NHL will ever expand internationally?
That's a good question. I mean, it's kind of we've already gone Canada, U.S. I don't know if that has anything. If you guys,
yeah, I mean, I think they're talking about Europe. You know, would you have a franchise in Europe?
I don't believe that would happen. Just you got time changes and travel, and it wouldn't work out for scheduling. But I mean, I think there's a lot of talk about playing, whether it's more games or trying to get tournaments over there, or whether it's starting the season, or we've done a little bit in the past. But I think it's important to try to grow large fan bases over in Europe as well. So it's nice to be able to spread the game wherever, and it is big over there. So it's cool whenever we get the chance to go over and see support from other countries too.
Good to talk to you, man. Keep up the good work, and let's find the back of the net a few more times and never miss a call from your dad.
Yeah, we will. For sure.
All right, but all the best, and thanks to MB Financial Bank. MB means business. And we are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. We've got another fabulous choir to introduce to you in just a second. Before we get to that, my friend Tim Benker is here with my friend John DeCoste. Tim, how are you?
How you doing, Steve? Thanks for having me on.
Nice to see you.
We're here to talk about the show, but we got a choir, right?
We got a choir to do first as well. But yeah. Don't you have a show to plug as well?
Oh, so? Absolutely. The Idiot's Guide to Fixing Stupid at the Metropolis Theater in downtown Arlington Heights. That's Monday night.
This coming Monday.
This coming Monday, 7:30 p.m. An hour and a half of me talking about all things stupid.
Was there enough material this year?
As a matter of fact, I could have had an hour and a half on politics in Washington alone.
So this is volume one.
This is volume one. That's right.
Is it a year-end respect? What's the word I'm looking for?
A year-end review?
Year-end
retrospective. Actually, we touch on the beginning of history, how stupidity started.
Oh, stupid is ancient.
Absolutely, from the caveman through Adam and Eve, if that's the route you go.
Okay.
And and then up to present day.
Let's get a live review of the show, John. You've seen it. How funny is it?
I've seen it many times. I laugh out loud. I've been to our shows.
But not like the LOL you throw in an email. You literally laugh out loud.
No, I text him.
Yeah, he texted me. He texted me Kofefe last time.
Oh, which is odd.
That's
right.
Doesn't
even make sense. All right, tickets for Monday. How do we get those?
You can go to metropolisarts.com. You can see my handsome face. The Idiot's Guide to Fixing Stupid. Click. We'll buy tickets right there.
All right, and then on New Year's Eve, where are we going to be, John?
We are going to be with Tim and Mike Toomey. We're going to be at the Tivoli Theater, downtown Downers Grove. 7 o'clock show. You can go to eventbrite.com.
New Year's Eve for people that can't stay awake until midnight.
It's perfect. Out by 9. It's a beautiful thing.
Going to be a funny show. It's an Iceman production and sponsored in part by American Weathermakers.
Correct. Very good.
I'll tell you what. There's a lot to keep under control on this show. I'll tell you right now. All right. In studio right now, the fine, fine people from the Antioch Choir. But let's get more specific as to the name of the band here and introduce you to some people who you ought to know. So in studio first is Trey Hickey, the choir director, and Jonathan Unch, the director of bands. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Now, one of you take this. What's the actual name of the school?
The name of the school is Antioch Community High School, and the choir we have for you today is our Madrigal Choir.
Okay. And as choir director, what skills do you have?
What skills do I have?
Yeah. Did you graduate from a fine college of music somewhere?
Yeah, University of Illinois.
Okay. And did you major in music?
I majored in music education and vocal performance.
So are you doing what you wanted to do with your life?
I am, very much so.
How gratifying is that?
It's pretty great.
These seem like great kids. Have they all pulled one over on me?
Yeah, they're acting pretty good right now, but we'll see how they do in the bus ride home. But yes, they're pretty great kids.
And Jonathan Unch, Mary Vandeveld on the seventh floor. I don't know if I'm supposed to reveal this. Have you ever met Jonathan?
Never. Mm-hmm. Good looking, though, isn't he?
He's a good looking kid. Who is Jonathan to you, Mary?
He would be my son-in-law.
How about that?
Married to my daughter, Kelsey.
How about that?
Yes.
Mary speaks very highly of you, Jonathan. As director of bands, what do you do?
So
and
I
don't say you direct the bands.
I do direct the bands. Yeah. I teach band and percussion, jazz band and marching band, but I also have the honor of playing the piano when the choir performs with instrumentation.
I always wanted to learn the piano. John, didn't you want to learn the piano?
Oh, I did, but then you got to learn it.
That's the hardest part of that whole thing. How old are you when you started playing?
I started in first grade, so what does that make you, 6, I think?
Don't look at me, I don't know.
And Trey, do you play instruments as well?
I play piano not as well as Jonathan, but my main thing is singing, so.
Okay. But as band guy, don't you have to play like 47 instruments?
I do, yeah. In school, they make you learn every single band instrument, and I'm not good at them, but...
You're good at clarinet.
Oh, stop,
I'm good at clarinet, guitar, piano, those are my main instruments.
Yeah.
So.
He's good at all of them.
Oboe?
I am terrible at the oboe.
French horn.
French horn and oboe are the two hardest instruments, in my opinion.
Trombone.
Trombone. Luckily, we have another teacher at our school.
Tuba.
Tuba. I'm okay at tuba.
Pan flute.
I've never played a pan flute.
Neither
regular
have I.
Flute, yeah.
How many instruments can you play, Jendikos?
Oh, my God, none.
All right, fine. All right, the kids are going to sing for us here. What are they going to do first?
We are doing the First Noel. Is that right? All right, they chose the set, so the First Noel.
All right, there you go. Antioch, school name again is?
Antioch Community High School.
The Antioch Community High School, live on CLTV and 720 WGN.
Cold wind.
perfection. Absolute perfection. Trey, Jonathan, the sitting ovation for these kids. The sitting ovation. You. Hey, what a golf clap. Hello.
They're phenomenal.
Come on, clap for yourselves since I'm the only one clapping for you.
Incredible. My man.
Really beautiful.
I think the choir should take the next song, though.
Yeah. You thought that was Jonathan and Trey?
Oh,
no,
was I mistaken?
Couldn't find underwear that tight. So they're going to come back. They're going to sing some more. We'll talk a little more to Tim Benker.
Perfect.
Again, Monday night at the Metropolis in Arlington. Dave, do you have anything to add at this point that's important?
You know what? you mean this? No.
Oh, okay.
No, I thought I was going to just say how
obviously
beautiful
you did a nice job,
the performance,
didn't it?
And they're not really, there's no active conducting going on. No. They're like self-conducting.
Well, that's not what you want to hear, right, Trey?
I can't believe you said that.
Silent conducting.
This group actually performs without a conductor everywhere. We have a gig right after this as well. They have 18 carols that they just go without me. So
where's the gig?
We're singing at a local church. So as soon as we get back, I'm going to shove pizza at them.
So these guys are off all day?
Yes, they are.
What a scam you guys are.
I know. That's great.
Wow, that's tremendous. And I assume through the holidays, a bunch of other shows as well?
Yeah, we have a few shows starting. We have a show Friday, Saturday, Tuesday, next Thursday. Yeah, they do a lot of stuff. We start learning these in June, or July. So.
Oh, say, so how did the Scarpelli, family, Raymond Chevrolet in Antioch, and Ray Chevy down the road at Fox Lake. They're friends of ours. So we'll come back. We'll do more in a second on 720 WGN and CLTV. The Antioch. Help me out, dude. Why do I keep forgetting this? The Antioch Community. Antioch Community High School Choir is here. I'm sorry, you guys. And whenever you're ready, please sing again, please, on 720 WGN and CLTV.
Jolly old Saint Nicholas, lean your ear this way. Don't you tell a single soul what I'm going to say. Christmas Eve is coming soon, now you dear old man. Whisper what you'll bring to me, tell me if you can. When the clock is striking 12, when I'm fast asleep, down the chimney broad and black, with your pack you'll creep. All the stockings you will find hanging in a row, mine will be the shortest one, you'll be sure to know. Johnny wants a pair of skates, Susie wants a sled, Nellie wants a picture book, yellow, blue, and red. Now I think I'll leave to you what to get the rest. She's a picture of Santa Claus, you will know the best.
How about that? How about that?
I've never heard that song. I've never heard that. That is phenomenal.
Talk to me about that, Trey. Was that a special arrangement?
No, we've actually been doing these carols at Antioch Community High School for well before my tenure. I've been there for 8 years. They've had this choir for over 30 years.
But that hook at the end,
in their 40s?
Yes. They're all 40 years old.
All terrible students, but great vocalists. But I didn't know there was a hip-hop angle to that song. There was
you just speed up the end of it. What other songs, guys, do we do that have a fast verse? Because we can do another
Jingle
one.
Bells.
Jingle Bells. Which we just speed up the end. Make it different for the audience.
All right. Let's do one more before the break. And by let's, I mean you.
Okay. Let's do Hark the Herald, guys.
Okay. Here we go.
Hark the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn King. Peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled. Joyful all ye nations rise, join the triumph of the skies. With angelic host proclaim, Christ is born in Bethlehem. Hark, the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn King. Hail the heavenly Prince of Peace, hail the Son of Righteousness. Light and life to all he brings, risen with healing in his wings. Mild he leaves his throne on high, born that man no more may die. Born to raise the sons of earth, born to give them second birth. Hark, the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn King.
That's beautiful. That's ridiculous. They're so good, it's ridiculous.
I'm telling you.
Really tremendous. Really, really, really good. We will take a break. We'll come back. More from the Antioch community. Is it a high school choir? We call them high school. Are these all high schoolers?
They're all high schoolers. Okay. It's called the Madrigal Choir from Antioch Community High School.
And great job, you guys. Sound really, really great. This is the rehearsal. No, this is all live. We'll come back with more coming up live on CLTV and 720 WGN. We are live in studio on CLTV and on 720 WGN. Guys, these are TV cameras there, and behind my bald head. So feel free to wave to your family and your friends. You're big TV stars along with being on the radio here. Thanks for being here. And again, let me say hi to the bosses, Trey Hickey and Johnny Unch here. Johnny's director of bands. Trey is the choir director. These seem like really decent kids from Antioch. Do you think they're better than the other kids in the other towns?
That's a tough question. I can't win either way. I think so. I'm a little biased, though.
How long have you been at Antioch?
This is my 8th year.
You don't seem old enough to have been anywhere 8 years.
I'm 33.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to University of Illinois, and then I went to high school.
That's right. We discussed that earlier, didn't we? That's what happens when you get up at 4.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get to perform yourself anywhere now?
Every once in a while. I'm actually singing part of Handel's Messiah for a local group that sings in Antioch December 17th.
Once a performer, always a performer.
Can I say Trey has an unbelievable voice? And the two of them have also put together a CD for the school, correct, boys?
Oh, yes, we did. We put together a little CD. We have a recording studio that our school blessed us with. And we put together a holiday CD last year, and we got told to do it again. And we just
It's great.
Sell it to the local community.
Can you pick it up somewhere?
Not really.
Well, that sounds really
I'll
good.
Get you a copy.
Hey, we got to have copies.
I know
we
a guy.
Have
copies.
No, but if you know anything about show business, this is definitely the way to promote.
Yes.
Yeah, bring it up, but don't allow people to buy it.
Yeah. There's a couple songs in there that we wouldn't really want to be everywhere.
What is what?
Little goofy ones that our administrators and things sang together. They're awesome for our kids, but
oh, I see.
I don't think it'd flow well in all their hands.
What is the mascot for Antioch High School?
Well,
isn't this weird?
It's called the Sequoits,
and that's a lozenge.
It might as well be. It's actually a pebble that's at the bottom of a. Like a brook in a creek. I'm dead serious. So that's like we don't have a.
Whose idea was that?
I don't know. Our school's been around for over 100 years. Our mascot.
But 100 years ago,
fans,
there were lions and tigers and bears.
I know. You're right.
I hate to see the mascot at a football game.
There's a little pebble running around.
No, it's like a Superman type guy. Superfan stand. It's an awesome mascot. It's not a pebble costume.
Gotcha.
Let's go, Pebbles.
Yeah.
Johnny, when you're not doing this, do you get a chance to perform?
Every once in a while. I used to perform more, but the teaching schedule, performances with the kids really take up a lot of time.
On YouTube, if you look up Hi-Fi Superstar, that's actually a local band. They do really good work around the Chicago area. Johnny used to be in that a long time ago. He has really, really long hair, rock star. So Hi-Fi Superstar on YouTube, look that up. They can thank me for that
F-Y
later.
Or F-I?
F-I.
Okay. Yeah. Hi-Fi Superstar. Mary, have you seen this?
Oh, yeah. Johnny's you
may
a rock
have,
star.
You may have kept your daughter away from him if you saw that.
That's how my daughter met him when his hair was really long. Mm-hmm. And then I met him that way, and I went, ooh, a rock star's in the family now. This is cool.
Tina Brown, editor of Vanity Fair, amongst many other things, has the Vanity Fair Diaries out. She'll talk to us in a few minutes. But can we get another song here?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Once again, the Antioch Community Madrigal Choir. Yeah.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Day or two ago, I thought I'd take a ride, and soon Miss Fanny Bright was sitting by my side. The horse was lean and lame, misfortune seemed his lot. We got into a drift and think it really got us sight. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
while you're young, and drink the girls tonight, and sing the same song. Just get them all tonight. 244 is deep, then hitch into an open sleigh, and take the lead. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Once again, absolutely tremendous. Tremendous. Texters from the 708, thanks for having the choirs on your show. I'm a proud parent of musical children, choir, band, and orchestra. Please continue supporting the arts in our public schools. Texter from 630 just says, beautiful. Another texter says, we ought to form our own choir. Can you imagine how much we would suck?
Yes.
I mean, you're good. Yes. You have musical talent. No. Dave, do you have any musical talent?
Well, it's my family, but...
Yeah, I used to sing in a blues band, which is two or three chords tops, you know, in two or three note range. So...
We could do it.
We could lip sync to whatever John does. So... but very impressive. And we'll keep you guys around. Maybe I have time to do one more here. Great. In a second. Again, I want to make sure you guys know that tickets are available for my friend Tim Benker's show. Tim, you're going to be where Monday night?
I'm going to be at the Metropolis Arch Theater, downtown Arlington Heights. The Idiot's Guide to Fixing Stupid is the name of the show. We'll be presenting Stupid from the Caveman. Stupid throughout history, and hopefully providing some fixes so that... we have a more intelligent and bright society.
So this isn't like the CD from the Antioch Madrigal Choir where they made it but you can't have it?
No.
You can actually go to your show?
As a matter of fact, if you give the box office money, they will in turn give you some tickets.
Ah.
And you can see the show.
Yeah, that seems like... Trey, make a note of that.
Marketing.
Yes. Sounds good.
Tina Brown, scheduled to appear here in a matter of just minutes. And if we have time, we're going to get one more from these guys before they go off to their second gig of the day. Trey and Johnny, the slave drivers. We'll come back and do more on CLTV and 720 WGN. Tina Brown will join us in just a second. We're spending some time here with Trey Hickey and Johnny Unch and the Antioch Community Madrigal Choir. How old are these kids, by the way, guys?
We have freshmen all the way up to seniors.
Where are the seniors? Raise your hand. Oh, look at this. A bunch of seniors. How many of you know where you're going to college, if you're going to college? Where are you going in the back?
Northern Illinois.
Oh, Northern Illinois. Yeah, the Flying Horn Frogs,
Huskies.
I believe.
Right?
Oh, the Huskies. And where are you going?
SIU.
SIU. All right, who else? What other schools do we have represented? Where are you going?
Marquette University.
Marquette. There you go. Yes, and?
I'm going to Harper College.
Harper College. Excellent. Look at you guys. You're all just so advanced. Yes?
Northwest Florida State.
Northwest Florida State. What town is that in? You're going to need to know that. That's the first question.
GPS.
It's going to be difficult to get there if you don't know what town it's in.
I just want to go somewhere warm.
Okay. Just his desire was warm. Let me introduce Tina Brown here. Tina Brown, award-winning writer and editor and founder of the Women in the World Summit. She was the boss at Vanity Fair and the New Yorker, amongst many other places. Her biography of the Princess of Wales, The Diana Chronicles, was a New York Times bestseller for weeks and weeks. She started The Daily Beast, which many of you read every single day. She's a commander of the Order of the British Empire, and I'm not, amongst her many, many honors. And the Vanity Fair Diaries, her new book, 1983 to 1992. It's been quite a while since I've been able to talk to Tina Brown. Welcome back.
Oh, it's great to be there. I was actually in Chicago last week. I do love coming. And I did a book signing, and I just had a ball.
One of the world's great cities, as you know.
Yes, it is. It really is. It's got such a lot of gusto.
The Vanity Fair Diaries. Get two copies. You're careless. You'll lose one. Then you'll have a backup. And do the same for all of your friends. It covers 83 to 92. Now, if I know my history here, when you got there, Vanity Fair was a mess and was really on the verge of shutting down, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was a kind of very much overhyped turkey when I got there. You know, it had these two guys who had edited it before me, and they just took it into the tank. And so I, like so many women, always get, you know, brought in when the things become a complete mess. I came in just out of my 20s. I was given the job because I had been working in London for the UK company of Condé Nast, and they said to me, well, give her a try. And I came in, and I took over Vanity Fair, and, you know, I went blazing in there, you know, all guns going to turn this thing around, a kind of Mission Impossible. And I had an incredible 8 years doing just that with, you know, Annie Leibovitz, great photographer, Dominic Dunn, who was a writer that I discovered as a film producer before he wrote anything. And, you know, we really kind of turn into a juggernaut.
Yeah, and it's not normally easy to point to a specific thing that is the epic moment that turns things around, but you made the point the other day. I think it was on CBS Sunday Morning, amongst other places you've talked about this. It was the Ron and Nancy Reagan photo shoot, right?
That was one of the big, big covers that turned. We had three big things that turned us around. One was the Ron and Nancy photo shoot, in which we, the great photographer Harry Benson, took a boombox with us and played Nancy with a laughing face, and the two of them ended up foxtrotting before us against a white screen, and then went into this incredible screen kiss that became the Reagan kiss that went everywhere. Another great cover we did in the same kind of run was of the revealing. We broke the news that the Princess Diana and Charles' marriage was not the fairy story that everybody thought.
Right.
We called it the mouse that roared, and it made immense news everywhere, because at that point everyone thought that this was still, you know, the golden fairy story marriage. And it, of course, you know, in my reporting showed that actually anything but, you know. And the third big story was one that Dominic Dunn did about the accused murderer, Klaus von Wühler, where he just got every access in the world. And the great fashion photographer we used, Helmut Newton, photographed von Wühler wearing black leather head to foot. And he just looked like something so unbelievably sinister that everybody used those pictures. And, you know, it's the rule of three, right? We had three incredible covers in a row, and boom, and we took off.
Is it the golden age of pop culture? And by that I mean everybody, the Andy Warhol thing has come true. Everybody has their own show now, and in most cases it's their own Facebook page.
They have their own podcast.
Yes, they have their own podcast. Everybody's opinion is heard, frankly, too much. But from 1983 to 1992, the magazine business was absolutely crucial. And, you know, by the mid-80s, you had figured out a way to maximize it, and you weren't even 35 at that point.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was a wonderful time in magazines. You know, it was a tough turnaround, but at the same time, the business itself was booming, you know, and it was a time when a media culture was very, very confident, because it didn't have the digital disruption where everybody's attention was, you know, was splintered into a million pieces. I mean, the big networks, the TV shows, the movies, you know, all eyeballs were in the same directions when you had a hit. So that was the greatest thing about that period, that it made for great cover stories. I mean, there was Madonna, era of Madonna, of Dynasty, of Miami Vice. You know, these were the things that everybody talked about and everybody watched, and they made great cover subjects for Vanity Fair.
The Donald Trump experience, most people who knew Trump or ran across him found him to be loud and obnoxious, but also very charming, as long as you weren't stuck in an elevator with him. But once he decided you weren't completely, in his view, loyal to him, what did he do?
Oh, God. I mean, well, you know, I liked him at first. As I write in the book, I describe how I extract the art of the deal, and I say this is BS, but it's authentic BS. And then our writer, Marie Brenner, covers him later when he suddenly became far less charming. She wrote about his bankruptcies. She wrote about his divorce. And she read about the fact that he had Hitler's speeches on his desk. That went, he went absolutely ballistic and really, you know, was incredibly belligerent. And she went out to a benefit dinner and felt something cold and wet in her dress. And she thought the waiter had spilled a drink. And she looked up, and there's Donald Trump making off across the room with a glass of wine, which he had just emptied down her bag. So this was like the Donald Trump we see today, which was like never letting any slip, you know, anything pass. You know, when he was mad, he really let you know.
Yeah, and not that he gets a pass on this, but he learned at the feet of tiny in all ways Roy Cohn, one of the worst people to ever walk the streets of New York.
True. Yeah, he was pretty bad news. He was very much a figure of the 80s. And, you know, I mean, that whole world that I covered was in the 80s in the diary. It was this kind of swirl on the one hand of this black tie, you know, uptown stuff that came with the Reagan White House and the celebrity culture. But at the same time, there was a dark undertow. And I write quite a lot about, you know, AIDS, for instance, you know, comes up again and again in the book.
Sure.
I mean, I was at funerals so often, you know, people were dying around you. It was a kind of, there was a definite split between those who were partying up a storm and those who were being afflicted by the other side of, you know, Reagan economic policies, and there was a lot of homeless which sprang up, and rise of Rudy Giuliani to deal with it. It was all there in the diaries, and it was so fun. The fact that I kept all those details of what it was like to make a success. I think that sometimes when you talk about a success that you had, you forget about the striving and how hard it was, and particularly with two young kids. I was juggling all of that at the same time. So the backstage stuff in the pages of it's the diary, cool. I think, is the most kind of compelling, really.
Yeah, and I think there's a lesson there for everybody. I don't care what you do. Write it down. Write it down for your family history.
So but true. I tell everybody to keep a diary.
The Vanity Fair Diaries, 1983 to 1992. Tina Brown, always nice to talk to you, and good luck
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll come back in a moment. Bill Leff with, I don't know who his co-host is today. Do we know? Bill Leff and the Antioch Community High School Madrigal Choir co-hosting. Stand by for that. That's coming up on 720 WGN. Tomorrow, Mark Sapelsa, before he retires on Friday, he'll be live in studio with a regular dose of politics and things of that nature. Thanks to Tim Benker, Monday night, again at the Metropolis in Arlington Heights. And, of course, John DeCoste, our musical director. Speaking of music, Johnny and Trey and the Antioch Madrigal Choir. One more before we go.
All right, guys. And thank you for having us before we
Our
go
pleasure.
Off.
Our pleasure.
We really appreciate the opportunity. This has been awesome.
Good.
Take it away, guys.
Deck the hall with boughs of holly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Tis the season to be jolly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Don we now our gay apparel, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Draw the ancient yuletide carol, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. See the blazing yule before us, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Strike the harp and join the chorus, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Follow me in merry measure, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. While a tale of yuletide treasure, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Fast away the old year passes, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la. Hail the new year, lads and lasses, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la. Sing we joyous all together, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la. Heedless of the wind and weather, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la.
Fantastic.